Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio. Live at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, you're listening to The Tidbit, brought to you by Curate. I'm your host and the CEO of Curate, Kim Bryden. Do you run a small business or have dreams to start one? Well, here at The Tidbit, we've got your back. Each week, we talk through tidbits of knowledge around starting or running a small business with a food and beverage lens. This show is based on a biweekly newsletter we send out at Curate called The Tidbit. So if you're eager to learn more tidbits of knowledge about the food and beverage industry, starting or growing a business, or even just entrepreneurship lessons learned, you can sign up today. We have Ascend coming out next week, so head over to curateconnect.com and sign up in the footer. That's CURATEconnect.com. So after our last show, I received a question from a listener on the topic of purpose-driven businesses. That listener? My dad. Thanks for tuning in, Dad. Anyway, he wrote me and said, quote, I just finished your latest podcast and it made me think about purpose-driven businesses and purpose-driven people. I suspect one attracts the other. I often struggled with how to awaken the non-purpose-driven person to see the value in the greater good. Is it just in our DNA or is there a way in? I guess this is where I genetically get my deep thinking from. So two things to sort of unpack here. First, one, I actually love this idea of listeners asking questions and us answering on air. So what do you think about that? I mean, maybe next season we take business entrepreneurship questions from you and answer them on air and how-to segments. So if that sounds interesting, drop us a comment, send us a line over at curate.co/blog. So two, Dad, thanks so much for listening and thanks for the question. I love you very much. And so for some context, my dad is a baby boomer through and through, worked at his job for 35 plus years, saved for retirement, grew up during the beginning of television, which I think created our society's collective consciousness around what is perceived to be, quote, the perfect family, what that looks like, even though that never really existed. Anyway, so I took my dad's question, how to awaken the non-purpose-driven person to see value in the greater good, with all of this context in mind. There is definitely a generational shift here, and it had me researching and diving deeper into our current work-life balance structures, the future of work, which I would argue is now. We're here. It's the future. We have very different complex ways of having that, quote, balance between work and life. And what makes somebody an original thinker? What makes that person a purpose-driven person and wanting to believe in purpose-driven businesses? And I suspect that fostering the qualities of creativity and curiosity lead to a life fulfilled with more purpose. And I want to explore this more. We're going to play a clip that really sets up our conversation around what may be making us feel creative or not creative in our lives and work right now. This is a soundbite from a talk given at the Wired for Wonder conference in 2016 by Rahaf Harfouch, a digital anthropologist who focuses on disruptive technology, digital culture, strategy, and innovation. And here she's talking about the future of work and the intersection of productivity and creativity. We'll link to the full conversation on our blog so you can hear more, but let's take a listen.
So what's interesting is that on a large scale, we're seeing a big transformation happen. Productivity is going from something that was once aimed at large groups, so it's going from something that was quite collective focused down to the individual. And creativity is going in the opposite direction. Creativity used to be something that was focused on the individual and now has become an increasingly important collective priority. So they're kind of traveling this way, and where they intersect is our modern work culture. Now, one of the biggest challenges is that these two things are fundamentally incompatible in many ways. For one thing, productivity is based on this notion of continuous output. Most of the ways that we measure productivity is about accounting for every single minute of your time and linking the time that you spend working to very clear goals. I work at the factory, I punch in within 8 hours, I make X amount of widgets during this time every single day, and that is just how I measure whether or not I'm a good employee or not, whether or not I'm productive. But as many of us know, creativity is actually something completely different. The neurobiological study of creativity is a very new field, and what we're starting to learn is that the brain needs a completely different set of circumstances in order to be creative. The creative process is messy and disjointed. And one of the main things that we need to be creative is large blocks of unstructured time. Time when we're not actually actively doing anything that's a highly heavy cognitive task. This is why when you're working on a problem and you're sitting at your desk and you're trying to power through and you can't figure out a solution, why a couple of hours later that idea hits you when you're in the shower, when you're walking the dog, when you're washing the dishes. Sometimes you need to step back from doing a task in order to find the answers that you're looking for. That is how creativity works in our human brains. But productivity doesn't enable us to take those breaks because productivity is all about focus on continuous output.
Totally fascinating. I mean, is it absolutely no wonder why we're all trying to figure out ourselves, our purpose, how to figure out this blend of personal and professional life? I mean, our systems are set up for us to be cogs in the wheel, right? Productivity, efficiency, not to question the system, not to add your own individual creativity and purpose to the equation. But that's definitely changing, right? And as we head to break, I want you to mull on this. The next time you're feeling like a failure or that you just can't get it together, that you don't know how to be both a productive citizen and creative, remember, you are not a failure. It's really our societal norms that are failing you. We'll be right back with our guest today, Crystal Mack.
Full Service Radio is supported by Compass. Discover Compass, America's first modern real estate company. By pairing the industry's top agents with technology, Compass delivers an incomparable client experience from the first-time buyer to the seasoned seller. Visit them today in DC, Maryland, and Virginia, or navigate compass.com day or night.
Hi, Crystal. Welcome to the Tidbit.
Hi, Kim. How are you?
Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So this conversation around creativity, preserving your passion, your purpose, I know it's something dear to your heart and also mine. And so I'm thrilled to have you here today.
Thank you.
But before we talk about our own personal journeys and creative processes, I think it's important for us to back up and provide context around why the journey of entrepreneurship also requires a discussion around the intersection of creativity and self-care. Mm-hmm. And so in order to sort of tee up us diving into that deeper, I want to bring up this talk that I heard recently. There's an organizational psychologist by the name of Adam Grant, and he studies individuals he deems, quote, originals. And in this TED Talk that he has given called The Surprising Habits of Original Thinkers, he shows a slide that says, big headline, the creative process. And then it lists steps 1 through 6. And it says, 1, this is awesome. 2, this is tricky. 3, this is crap. 4, I am crap. 5, this might be okay. 6, this is awesome. And so the point of this slide is he's trying to map out, like, as you're going through an idea, what are all of these things that pop up in your mind? Mm-hmm. And his point, the key to being original, is avoiding the leap from 3 to 4, this is crap, to I am crap, and going straight to 5. So this is crap to this might be okay. And so I want to emphasize this more and more because there's these two types of doubt, right? There's self-doubt and there's idea doubt. Mm-hmm. And that you as the entrepreneur, any listener, you know, you are not crap. You're not tied to the success or failure of your idea. You can only just keep testing and iterating. And yeah. So, Chris, I want to lean into this a bit more with you and acknowledge that sentiment in of itself requires a ton of self-love and self-care mm-hmm. and acknowledgement. And I think it's undeniably important that we as entrepreneurs acknowledge that. So I'd love if we could start talking about your experience with this and the importance of self-care rituals for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that I've heard self-care used so much last year. It was almost to the point where it was like abused.
Oh, no. Yes.
And I was like, oh my goodness, everyone stop saying self-care and equating that to putting on a face mask.
Which right.
obviously, yes, that can be a form of self-care, but self-care looks like many different things.
Totally.
So for me, I think, you know, you'll never really know what type of care you need until you know yourself, right? Mm. So what does that require? That requires a lot of personal soul searching. That requires a lot of like ugly truths, beautiful truths, acknowledging your place in the world and also in your career where you are, and really taking time away to process all of those findings. I think that, and obviously time is a luxury that all of us don't have.
Right.
So especially when you're an entrepreneur, you know, I think even the definition of entrepreneur the other day, I was looking up just to see, like, because people are like, entrepreneur, woman in business, you know, like, what does that mean? And I think it said something, one of the definitions was someone who takes a high financial risk to be like, to make a business happen or to make a company happen. And I was like, wow, there are so many people who are having, walking around with this title of entrepreneur who have not done that. You know, and high financial risk doesn't always look like money right away. I think that's the thing that we all forget. It looks like time away from your family. It looks like time away from yourself. It looks like, you know, time away from your friends. Time is money. Especially, that's one of the first lessons I learned the hard way as a business owner. Not charging for my time, you know, charging for the ingredients and charging for the product, but not costing time as well. And that's also something that you should consider in the form of self-care. You know, when you're, you know, taking time away from your business or when you're charging or costing your menu for your business, you know, always factor in that element of self-care. I know that sounds like a strange thing, but, you know, you'll thank yourself later when you're not like crying in a bin of flour at like 5 a.m. being like, why did I say yes? And what did I do? This is not financially worth it.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that, you know, it is very hard, especially as a marginalized person in the food industry, being a woman and being a Black woman. It's very hard to not land on that. What was it? 3, 4, 5. It's hard to not land on 4 and I am crap.
Right.
Because, you know, I was actually listening to a podcast the other day that was talking about the high rate of imposter syndrome amongst people of color. Because oftentimes, you know, you don't see other people succeeding in the way that you want to succeed personally or in a larger scale. There's no point of reference. So if there's no point of reference, how am I really supposed to know what that looks like? And how am I supposed to know that my dreams are valid, you know, or unless, absolutely, you know, you have a strong support system around you. And even as a woman, you know, like there are so many women chefs out there that, you know, they have a specific path set in mind for their journey. And since there aren't very many of us in the industry being recognized for what we're doing beyond, like, you know, the stereotypical, like, cute, quirky baker, or not knocking myself or anyone else that bakes, but, you know, there are very specific ways that the industry chooses to shine a spotlight on us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't see very many, you know, or when they say, like, Dominique Crenn cooks like a man, you know, like, it's not, you know, it's not enough to just exist. You have to kind of fall into the category that people put you in order to, be successful, to be seen, quote, successful, not necessarily successful,
right,
but to be seen to the in the way that you are a commodity or a hot ticket for investors. And then it kind of falls into the whole, like, monetizing yourself and monetizing your passion.
For sure. And then you yourself become a brand. And then what does that turn into? Because then you and yourself, your being, your uniqueness is the thing that makes you money. And then, wow, so much self-worth gets tied up in that notion. I mean, for me, money is a very complicated, I mean, who... Anyone is lying if they don't think money is complicated for them. But I'll just admit out there, you know, first and foremost, that money has a lot of emotional strings attached to it. And we've brought this up on the show before, but it you know, you can't run from the internal problems you have by throwing money at the situation. Mm-hmm. I tend to think that the constant fundraising process of certain, you know, tech companies that are out there, are people kind of running from themselves, and you're just like trying to throw money at the situation to fix things. But I think in order to have a sustainable business, to build a sustainable life for yourself, you have to acknowledge that internal battles. I think you said, you know, internal demons you may have, and sort of think through, how am I building a life that's sustainable on all fronts, not just the business, but also the self.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's why I think I was one of those people who thought they knew who they were and like very strong sense of self. But actually the journey of entrepreneurship showed me a lot of things that I probably wouldn't have put me in a lot of situations that I probably wouldn't have been placed into, where I had to make really tough decisions as to who to surround myself with and who to partner with and how to spend money, you know, or who, it's like discernment, who should I hire, you know, things like that. Like it's a thing that you know, if you're living your day to day working a 9-to-5, these are things you may not necessarily come across every day. It really makes you question your character. It really makes you question your place in the community as a whole, and your place in the world. And it really gives you a very, even though it actually can remove you from the world, it can also give you a strong sense of the world, of the worldview, I feel, and that you get privy to many people's problems.
Yeah.
Because they then become your problems.
Right.
Like, for instance, if you have employees that are struggling in certain parts of their life, you know, those are things that you are now struggling with, because, you know, that would be stupid of me to not invest a bit of myself and people that are, you know, giving up time in their life to make sure that my business is a success.
Right.
So I just want them to be happy. So if they're not happy because, you know, they don't have food and the place that we operate out of, the food is expensive, how can I make them happy? I provide them with healthy snacks and food just to make sure that they are eating well, and they have a good frame of mind, and, you know, they're happy, at least here. I can do that here. I may not be able to do that when they leave, but hopefully the wage that I provide them with is enough so that they can care for themselves separate from me.
But thank you for creating that space.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, and even then, like, it's not even, to me, it's still not enough, you know. Especially when you're partnering with people who are more expansion focused and not necessarily about sustainability, you know. And that's something I learned being in business. You see people with lots of locations, you're kind of like, well, they're killing it. And it's like, no, they're killing it, yes, but they're also not investing in the people. Unless they have a very strong bank of investors, or, you know, crazy, crazy high profit. You know, chances are, if you see a lot of locations of something popping up, they're probably not paying their employees well. They're probably not investing in the people who are really doing the grunt work. I remember reading, there was this thing online that I was seeing a lot of, like that was trending for a brief period. I haven't seen it too much recently, but, you know, that, I don't know if you've ever heard people have this conversation of saying that there should be no billionaires.
Oh,
have you ever seen that?
Only in the context of once upon a time, I worked for Whole Foods before it was acquired. And there was, I forget the exact metrics, but it was that even the CEO couldn't make X amount more than the lowest paid mm-hmm. employee mm-hmm. in the company.
Oh,
I don't know if that still stands there,
right,
but
right.
but along the same lines where there should be at least some sort of cap on like what someone's able mm-hmm. to make in relationship to everybody else's living wage.
True. That and also like the people who, you know, say, oh, like she's a multimillionaire or a billionaire. And it's like, yeah, but that person is not no longer working for that anymore. And they have other people working extra hard for that. Mm. So when it gets to that point of you're not really like self-made, are you? Because you're not self-sustaining because you have other people who, and I'm not saying that they should be making millions of dollars, but you have other people who are, you know, yes, you're providing jobs, but, you know, chances are they making a livable wage? Probably not. So, you know, yeah, they're working for a great company and this, that, and the other. I'm very fortunate to also be working part-time for an amazing company that constantly reminds me every day.
Can we give them a little shout
yeah,
out?
Yeah, shout out to Little Pearl.
Amazing. If anyone's listening and wants to go to Little Pearl, it's an Eastern Market. I had the pleasure of dining there on Valentine's Day. It was so adorable.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I love Little Pearl. I think what they're doing is amazing. We just received 3 stars from the Washington Post, so that's really exciting. You know, and that was one of the reasons I came to D.C. I was actually at a point in my food career where I was just feeling like, you know, Baltimore, as much as I love my hometown, I didn't feel as though my career would grow beyond where it was. And not so much growing Black Sugar, but more so growing personally as a food professional. I started to become jaded, started to feel stunted. And I always have this thought of myself as a potted plant. And I talk about this a lot. And, you know, whenever I feel like I am feeling stunted, I feel like that's probably because I need to be placed in or repotted in a bigger pot.
Mm.
DC is an adjacent pot city that is bigger and has more of a thriving, diverse food scene than Baltimore. Baltimore definitely has a strong food scene, but it's more like in its baby stages. And, you know, I can learn about my mistakes in the baby stages, but I really want to learn from people who have come really far and, you know, started in lines and kitchens, and now they have their own restaurant group, and they're walking the walk and talking the talk and doing and everything
have,
there.
And have the values that you
Yeah, and have
so
the values
about,
that we
yeah.
care about. And mm-hmm. it's great to see that people respond well to that in the community. You know, people really turn out and support for what Aaron's created. And to me, I think that, you know, that says a lot about, you know, when people say, oh, like, yeah, you can't pay a livable wage and like give people health insurance and survive. It's like, no, you know, it's not for everyone right away. But, you know, when you believe in something and the product is good and, you know, the community also believes in that and they really want to see other people, you know, live the way they deserve to live, especially in such a hardworking industry like the food industry.
Mm-hmm.
People will line up. People will literally line up to support you.
Absolutely.
And that's what he's created. And I think it's really great. And he's a very humble person, as are many of the other chefs in the industry or in the group. And they're kind and supportive, and they know about Black Sugar, and they ask about Black Sugar, and they, you know, how's it going? You know, what's new? Like they're,
that's awesome.
They want to see us all do well. And it was interesting to find out that so many other food scene people in DC actually work for the group. I know, mm-hmm. Patrick from Milk Cult.
Right.
And, I'm so sorry, I'm blanking. Ed, also from Milk Cult. They also work. They work at Roses.
Exactly.
So that's really cool.
It's a really supportive food scene yeah. here in DC. I mean, and Baltimore largely as well.
Yeah, for sure.
And I want us to segue into, you know, how the actual tangible, how you've developed the values that you have, mm. your creative processes, and your tactics you've deployed to have more of your self-care journey mapped out or tactics you've used. But we're going to take a quick break
sure.
and then we'll be back with the how-to of Crystal Mack.
Oh.
Thank you. We're back on the Tidbit with Crystal Mack. Crystal, we have known each other for almost 3 years, which is pretty cool.
That's it?
I know. It feels like a long time, but throughout all this time, I mean, I am continuously in awe of your creative process and your ability to absorb culture through a variety of lenses. And in the last segment, we were talking, you alluded to Black Sugar, your business. And so listeners, if you don't already follow at blk.sugar yes. on Instagram, now's the time to do it. I just want to highlight a few of your creations that I picked up on your feed. Mm-hmm. Sweet and spicy nori croissant, sweet heat from gochujang date wash, nori, white and black sesame seeds. Yum. Chinese five spice coconut ube, a purple yam pie with toasted marshmallow. Oh, I love that one. And tahini goat butter cake with a salted maple glaze. Oh my gosh, drooling. So I've started here listing all of these delicious results, but take us back a few steps. You know, how do you arrive at these flavor combinations? Do you have a certain creative process that you bring to the table? Pun or not pun intended.
I think it's more coming from sharing what I like and also more of a cultural exchange, not in an appropriation style, not from appropriation, but more cultural exchange. And like, these are things I like. This is their origin story. Let's talk about how cool this is when you combine a traditionally American pastry, like
a pie, sweet potato pie.
Yeah. Yeah. And add Chinese five spice, you know, like, you know, you wouldn't think it would work, but there are a lot of flavors or a lot of notes, a lot of spices in Chinese five spice that are used in very many different types of sweet potato pie recipes from different regions. So to me, I thought that would be a beautiful take using the ube. And we use ube a lot at Black Sugar just because it's just a beautiful root vegetable.
Yeah,
I love the coloring,
vibrancy.
Yeah, it's a pop of color. It's nutrient rich. It has a story. It's just a beautiful vegetable. It's just very beautiful, and I've always loved it. And I've always loved vibrant fruits and vegetables, and kind of baking them in pastries in ways that are unexpected.
Mm-hmm. Well, about the storytelling component.
Yeah.
I, again, absolutely love this about you and the cultural context that you bring to your creations. Mm-hmm. And in that last dish I mentioned in the little highlight reel, the tahini goat butter cake with the salted maple glaze, you created that for an event with Cherry Bomb Magazine.
Yes.
And you paired it alongside another Baltimore-based maker.
Oh, yeah.
Hannah
from Spiegelman.
A Sweet History. She makes ice cream based on art history.
Yes.
And just historical
events and figures.
I love her. I actually bought a few of her pints as holiday gifts this
that's
year.
That's so great.
Oh, my gosh. She's amazing.
It's
essentially
some of the best ice cream.
Yeah. I told her the essence of the humans that I was gifting them to, and she came up with entire creative flavor combinations based on the stories I told about that person.
She does her research. Like, that was her major in college. She went to Goucher, and history is her thing. And
I love that.
She's, you know, worked with really great galleries like in New York, like Bartolome, and she's really a talent.
Absolutely.
And I think that, you know, that's the thing, we should always be investing time and energy and support in our food community so that it can kind of grow and flourish.
Yeah.
Someone like Hannah, that's a very rare concept. I mean, the closest thing I've seen to it is like Cool House, where they create ice creams based off of architects. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Hannah really gets in there because it's such a small batch. She gets very detailed with her process, which is something that reminds me of myself when I came up in Karma Pop.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm about to go there because whether you're collaborating alongside other makers or other movements, I mean, not just an individual, but a larger movement at hand. I think you have a very unique ability to complement the qualities you see in that other person or movement and draw stories from them.
Thank you.
It's really beautiful. And so, you know, I think that also shows a lot in the concept of Black Market that you also have created. So tell us a bit more about Black Market and why you feel collaboration and even mentorship is so important in fostering creativity and new innovations.
Well, there's no way. It's more of like a design thinking element to me. You know, it's like contributing, like, and also a little bit of practice. How might we, you know, working to make sure that, you know, the village is strong together. Everybody, you know, has different experiences. So we'll never be able to get to our end goal if we don't share those experiences and know how to kind of better come at a problem from all angles, you know. So to me, that's kind of what I, you know, thought of when I created Black Market. It was more, it started more of like a cooperative economics thing, which it still is to me. We don't really charge our vendors to sell. And if we do, it's a very nominal fee. And it's just something that allows them to get their product in front of an audience that they might not normally have. Black Sugar, Karma Pop, myself, all of my brands, I've come to notice that, you know, it's a very diverse audience of people that come, men, women, Black, white, Asian, Latino, Latina, and they come from all over to support. You know, they believe in what Black Sugar stands for. So I think that's really great. And I know if they believe in something that, if they believe in what Black Sugar stands for, they will most likely believe in what Black Market stands for, which is, you know, driving sales of Black business, creating opportunity for Black creatives to have their product be seen on a broader local level as well as a national level. You know, that was my hope with the Black Market that we did at with Cherry Bomb Magazine at Trove. You know, Cherry Bomb had never come to Baltimore before, and they came specifically for this and to promote their cookbook. And, you know, people came, bought the cookbook, people who never had a chance to come to Black Sugar, or people who never really, you know, listen to Cherry Bomb Radio, but never got a chance to meet Claudia or Carrie. They got that chance. You know, it was really cool. So I think that, you know, kind of creating conversations, creating opportunities, that's really what Black Market is about. And I want to expand on that with the marketplace, doing markets, but then also doing ancillary events tied around that, happy hours, classes with a maker, you know, thinking about doing a henna happy hour. Yeah. So it's a few things that, you know, I want to be educational, but I also want to be fun, and community building lessons as well. I think that's, you know, that's one of my biggest inspirations, is being connected to the community and being connected to people. I've always been a people person, but I think it's just my background of being from Baltimore, where we're such a small city, and you can't help but be connected to people in that way, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, and on that thread of being a platform to create opportunity and also to elevate different voices.
Yes.
Part of your self-healing, self-care journey has also been through writing. And I wonder how that tactic you've deployed for yourself has also been a part of this community building. And has it? Why do you think writing is so important? And where has that sort of brought you today?
Yes, it definitely has. writing is important because it allows people to see that they're not alone in their feelings, and also allows you, the writer, to process any trauma or any joy or any, you know, any experience that you've had. It really allows you to kind of step back and really see from the outside of the feelings that you're going through. I've written a number of things and been posting them online, and people will message me and say, you know, thank you so much, that really connected with me, I feel the same way, I've really been going through it, or just so happy to see you glow. Like, I hope one day I have that too, like, you know. And it's really, I think with me and like social media, I feel like it's a very important thing to be transparent. I am not perfect. I don't live in this fantasy world where, you know, like, I'm always traveling and like fine fancy clothes and beautiful meals, you know. That's unrealistic. That's not, you know, that might be some people's world, but that's definitely not my world. That's mm-hmm. not the world I live in, you know. Every moment, you know, it's a, that's, my writings are kind of based on collections of little moments that I've had, essays of, you know, trials or tribulations that I've gone through, or moments of joy and celebration, poems inspired by an experience that is also very parallel to a dish, you know, like, you know, yeah, I,
a can't, friend of mine,
can't she, describe, but
yeah, no, a friend of mine, her name's Allie Armitage. She she runs these workshops called soul writing and how the practice of writing for yourself or journaling, it's like we talked about at the top of the show, in order to be in a creative space and to really tap into yourself, you need time and space to just be and let those thoughts and feelings flow.
Yeah.
And it's not always for a finalized, you know, polished blog post, right?
Exactly.
It's just like for you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, again, listeners, if you're trying to even just figure out how to get out of a rut, you know, maybe consider this practice of soul writing or just journaling for yourself. And something we had talked about earlier is a new intention you've sort of set around pivoting for passion preservation.
Yes.
What does that mean? Pivoting for passion preservation.
Pivoting for passion preservation means that, you know, oftentimes as creatives, we create things that we become beholden to because we've done such a great job of creating something and having people understand what that is that they then think, we've convinced them so much that they know our product that they begin to tell us how our product should be when they have no clue because they think they know us so well or they know what we've created so well. And then I don't know about you guys, but for me personally, my passion dies when it becomes overly monetized. When something, you know, if I'm creating something just to create it for a check and it's the same thing and it's monotonous and it's old, you know, that's the same thing with chefs. They get tired of a menu really quick. By the time it's opening time for a new opening day for a new restaurant, sometimes they're mostly over it. They're like, oh, I'm over it. Like, I've been working on this menu for like 3 months now and you guys are just tasting it and it's week two, but I'm over it now. I want to move on to something different. And that's kind of what was happening with me and Black Sugar. All of my projects that I've created, Karma Pop, Pie Cycle, Black Sugar, Black Market, it's all representative of me at a point in my life. Each business or each project, as I like to call them, it represents me at a different time and phase of my life. They are all a part of me, but they are not me right now, you know?
Oh, did you just bring this full circle around, like, you are this beautiful person who's creating these ideas and businesses. I mean, you created them, but it is not only you.
Yeah. You're not, I'm more than my creations.
Exactly.
You know? I create them, but I'm not just that they are a part of me, but I don't need to be beholden to them because I continuously grow, you know, that's like trying to hold a waterfall. You just can't do it. That's not, you know, we're fluid beings, creatives. So you can't stop that with just one idea. So that being said, pivoting for passion preservation is essentially doing a shift to make sure that you are feeling fulfilled as a creative and as an entrepreneur. You can still kind of keep everything going that you have right now, but, you know, kind of reaching out and driving or finding new ideas. I also call it self-propagation. That's when I, you know, clip off, if you imagine a pothos or some other type of philodendron that has a little knobby roots and you cut it and you put it in a little jar of water and it starts to root. That is me self-propagating here in DC. That's what I like to think of it as. You know, I still have my base plant in Baltimore that's growing and thriving, but I'm also taking a little cutting of myself and placing it in DC and picking up new experiences. Am I going to take myself out of this jar and root myself in DC in a new pot? Maybe, I don't know. But for now, I'm just taking it in and enjoying what I have and, you know, finding out new things about myself in this industry and myself in this city. And if this is something I still want to do, you know, this whole thing for me, was never about like being in a magazine and being on your lovely podcast or, you know, any of those things, or meeting the people that I've met and making the great new friends that I've met. It was always for me about self-discovery and finding out who I am and what my role and purpose is. That's, I think, you know, you were talking about genuine people or original people.
Yeah.
Original thinkers, their goal is never to have those things. Their goal is to just be fulfilled, in my opinion. I think I didn't listen to that TED talk, but original thinkers are doing it for themselves, and knowing that because they are doing it for themselves, they also have a responsibility to the world around them to be a good human and give back in a way that they can, you know, whether that's be through being vulnerable and honest with journaling and writing, or, you know, if you're Jose Andreas and giving back to people. It's really about finding your calling and also finding a way that your calling can help other people.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not necessarily about making the money. And if you get into it thinking it's about money, you will
never be fulfilled.
You'll never be fulfilled. And you'll just be chasing, even if you achieve the greatest success and you have multiple locations and you're, you know, traveling the world, you will never be fulfilled, and you will be an empty, sad person. And that's why I go on that mission of being a truly fulfilled, self-fulfilled woman and not seeking, you know, other people to provide that for me. Could have had that long ago, but it's not what I want.
Right. Amazing. Yeah, I set an intention for this year that at least once per month I would do something to break out of my normal routine and have a different perspective on life, arguably. You know, in January I went to a goal setting retreat in the mountains of Colorado, very random. This past weekend I went to a pottery workshop.
Oh, cool.
And so just sort of gleaning, you know, what does pottery have to do with me, like, making money?
Yeah.
Nothing or everything, right? Like, it doesn't matter, because if you're in the constant grind and if you're always reactionary to your business or what you're trying to build, then you, again, like we said at the top of the show, don't have time and space to explore those other parts of yourself. And what could that unlock? What could that trigger for a new idea or a new way of just being?
Yeah.
So how can people find you? How can they read more of your lessons learned, your writings?
I am working on a revamp for my website, crystalcmack.com. So you can head over there. It's still very in the early stages. So planning on having that completely finished media-wise by the end of the spring. And you can follow me on Instagram. My Instagram is KRYSTALC, as in cat, M-A-C-K, like the truck.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being here, Crystal.
Thank you for having me.
And until next time, everyone, remember to scale thoughtfully and source locally.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.